How will Ireland have beaten England on Saturday? What is Donico O'Callaghan's favourite time of year? And what's going on in France with Stade and Racing? It's all coming up on The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
With fantastic support, half of Ireland were here. The rest of them are hopefully smiling at home.
We had a bet earlier in the year, €20, that if we won it, I wouldn't cry, but it's the best €20 I'll ever spend.
Here's Heaslip. Well, he picks it up quickly and off he goes. Drops it off to Hinshaw. Robbie Hinshaw scores it. Rugby history. Ireland beat the All Blacks for the first time.
Hello and welcome to The Hard Yards, the Sports Show Rugby podcast. I'm Andy McGeady. Joining me on the line, as usual, is Donico O'Callaghan. Morning, sir.
Hi, Andy. How are you?
With me in studio is Sports Show Rugby reporter Pat McCarry.
Hey, how's it going?
And welcome to the current Racing 92 defence coach, Ronan O'Gara.
Hey, Andy.
How are you, Rog? We'll go straight into it. Rog, what's Donico's favourite time of year?
Donico's favourite time of year? That's a good question. I think actually it's between, I did a little bit of detective work on this, I think it's between March the 8th and March the 23rd, is it?
Why is that?
Because he for over 20 years, he kind of thinks he's 3 years older than me between that period of time. So at the minute, Donica is 37 and he wants to remain like that. Rog, I'm always 3 years younger than me. You're a different generation from me. I don't understand the stuff you would be doing. So to give a bit of background, Donica and myself, I would say, shared a room with Ireland for 10 years. He's the guy that probably and would know the most about me, because there's the, I suppose, the team environment, and then there's the bedroom environment, and the fact that that's where the real people are seen and the real stories come out, because the life as a professional rugby player is fascinating, and the fact that basically Donica and myself would have been a couple for 10 years in terms of, you know what I mean, you room with each other even for home games, so you spend Monday to Saturday with this person. So it's a, obviously a sport of emotional extremes, and I don't think I could have picked a probably more suitable rock in terms of a teammate, and it was such a great experience.
That's really touching. But I want to ask Donica, what are Rog's bad habits? Go on, Donica.
Sorry, no, he's right. I used to love. There's 2 weeks here where I could absolutely rip him to bits. That I'd more in common with Fergal, his younger brother, because he's just not our generation. He doesn't know what's going on in our lives, so. I used to take advantage of it. The only thing I probably miss was at this time of the year is, remember Rog, Kev in the Killiney used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. So used to make for interesting times up in the Killiney Castle, but he's right, we were roomies, and it makes a kind of special bond. We were friends anyway, but you kind of you get an unbelievable insight into guys, and you know when they're hurting, and you know the pressures that probably family don't even know. And everyone looks in at the Irish squad and it's mad. I said to you about seeing the Welsh lads the other day, everyone wants to be there, but no one wants to really make the sacrifices that you have to go through. And when you see, you know, I think you learn more from guys from bad days than good. And I've had fucking a lot of bad days with Rog, so it's been something that you'd value really highly, that type of friendship. So, without trying to get too corny, it's good to have a roommate like him. Good, even better if have a good mate like it.
Yeah, one that allows you to watch Murder, She Wrote.
Well, it's important, you know, stuff like Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing, really.
Was there ever, Donica, like, I suppose you talked about, or Rog talked about being a couple, like, was there ever a time you had a big falling out and kind of awkward kind of couple of days?
Oh, yeah, we've had falling outs the whole time. That was why it's good, you know. Like, I'll be honest, there's small things you could fall out over the wash bag, and we've gone through stuff like that, but I'll never forget there was times in Munster where I'll never forget. I wasn't on time for one of our conditioning stuff, and Rod ripped me one. And coming from him rather than any other coach or any management, it killed me. Like, and I swear I was never late for a Munster session again, because like I left him and the teammates down. So, but instead of, and I've seen it in other environments where people would go behind your back and say different things about you, he walked straight over and gave it to me between the eyes. And
but like, Donica, you know, I'm not angry, I'm just really disappointed.
Yeah, I wish it was that way, but no, it's because he demands more from you. He sets higher standards for you than you probably could set for yourself, and he wants you to reach beyond yourself. And we were lucky that, you know, not only Rodgers like that, but we had a team full of guys like that, which is great. And I'll be honest, I suppose maybe Rodgers see it a bit too. It isn't until you go into other environments you realise what you have in Munster and Irish dressing rooms is really, really special.
What was the the washback thing?
This is an unbelievably sore subject. Basically, for 10 years, we used one toilet bag, my toilet bag. So
between two,
I had good cosmetics, and Donica was, I used for every, basically, Christmas or birthday, there was new aftershave added. And Donica will tell this better. Like, it basically got to the stage where everything was a free-for-all bar the toothbrush. So, like, you know what I mean? In terms of even having a shave, you could be coming back to see a new blade being used, and you're like, Dunners, come on. But he, yeah, he helped himself like no other man, that's for certain anyway.
Donica, this is scandalous stuff.
All true. It was the best time of the year. I remember actually you packed the bag, so you'd have your boots, whatever, your number ones, and you kind of have a look at the wash bag and you say, all right, maximum, the toothbrush is all I need. I'm in with Rog, I'll have the best of Lockitang, Vera Wang, the fella, he had the best of gear, so I used to just make hay during that time.
That wasn't just cosmetics either. I think I went down in your estimation one day, remember, for the rule where every player had to bring their own water bottle, and we had a bleep test, didn't we? Come on, I'll let you tell it. You're better at telling it.
No, you're there. So one day we're doing fitness, and everyone has their own water bottle. So it's a bottle of Ballygown or Tipperary water, whatever lads can grab, you know. And there's our boy with a glass bottle of San Pellegrino up the top, like something you'd get in the finest restaurant in Cork. I was like, there's the difference with Raj, like, you know what I mean? Most expensive sparkling water you could come across.
Jeez, and the Leinster lads at the time were getting ripped for being the cappuccino cowboys, yeah?
I absolutely enjoyed it. It was like, basically, if I didn't, there was obviously one on the floor of my car.
Obviously.
And the rule was that you had to attend a session with the bottle, and this was, I wasn't prepared and I was scrambling. So I just said, no, for a bit of a giggle here, I'll bring this in. And the lads were like, oh my God, what is he doing? So after that, it was like, well, he has a sense of humour, but he's not that serious after all, is he?
Like all things like that, it does tend to backfire, though. There's not, like, conditioning in those days was it's probably tougher than it is now, because there was no measurement to it. It was a fitness course, basically kind of seeing how tough guys were mentally and really pushing them to the edge, you know, without GPS or without all the science that's around it now. So, you know, if you look back at some of those sessions, Rog, we'd never do sessions like that anymore. So,
give me an example. What something would you do regularly then that just would be laughed out of the gate now?
10 400s around the track.
But even the fitness test in itself was a 3K run or a 1K run. There's no rugby player anymore would run 3K, unfortunately. I'd love it, but it's not a test.
Yeah,
for
everything
rugby
now is, it's so scientific in terms of the heart monitor, the GPS, so basically everyone is individually monitored live.
Yeah.
That's the way the game has gone. So you have a look to see, does this guy need a top up? Does he need to be cut? Is he about to explode? And
but does fitness mean different things per position, for example, now, whereas back then it was one test for everybody?
To be fair, back then it wasn't one test for everyone, but it was a more general test adapted. Now it could be complete different programs.
Okay.
Would they still put you through the ringer? Like, you'd still put lads through the ringer to test them mentally. Would you still do that, maybe even in pre-season?
Well, we had a pre-season of 4 days with a game on the 5th day this year. So, like, that gives you the example.
Push them hard on the Tuesday.
From when I came from protected 12 weeks, the best of everything in an Irish Munster setup, and now you go to another club that has its own ambitions of doing well, that were French champions, but because of the programme, the calendar, this is what you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. It's quite incredible in terms of the different preparation required for essentially the same players with the same ambitions. So it's
French rugby is different. We've heard stories about that before, but we'll move on to hopefully happier things. So how I'm going to frame this is very straightforward. It's Saturday evening. We have beaten England. How has that happened? What has gone well for Ireland to have beaten this English team? And Rog, from your point of view as a defence coach, we're playing a team that shredded Scotland. How do you set up Ireland to face that?
Yeah, I think I was confident all along of home game victories. I don't think people appreciate how difficult it is to win away from home in the Six Nations. I think playing at home, it's an opportunity to show what it means to you, your family, your country, all these, I suppose, general points. But I think as a player, it's driven into you that you have to perform at home. And I'm not saying there's a mental opt out when you go away from home, but it is, people still understand that it's the same players 15 against 15, but it's not really 15 against 15, it's 15 plus 50,000. I think the power of the supporter should never be underestimated, especially for our country. I think that's what separates us. I think there's an incredible bond between players and supporters that, I suppose, the human mind is never, I suppose, ceases to amaze me in terms of what you can get out of it. I don't think any of us know the potential that is there when you are pushed. You just have to keep digging to get more. And I think that's one of my biggest learnings in the teams I've been performing in. And if there's one weekend that comes out, it's Ireland-England at home.
And you're playing, Ireland are playing England, who are a team that look to have cracked the mind thing.
Back to your point, I think it's a different England team. Their mental brittleness is gone. They are so performing. As you said, I watched and analysed the game against Scotland. It could have finished easily 82-21. Like, they left definitely 3 of 6 scoring opportunities in the second half out there. And I think you should just probably maybe reflect on that for a second. 82 points or 62 points is a mammoth score. And but it's the one ground in the world where you can be easily, I think, eaten up. Twickenham, it's different to playing in New Zealand, in the fact that when England get their chests out at home, they're a really formidable team, because they just kind of become in harmony with the English supporters, and they play and they steamroll you. That was my experience. I remember once I was captain, I think, and we went 10-0 up. I was there, this is going to be a great day. I think the score, it was the one, I think the day Nulo, so Cipriani got man of the match. It was 38-10 maybe, and he had a cracking game. But it was obviously hard to take when you're the captain and he's in, I suppose, your direct opponent.
Yeah. But was it the Paddy's Day game? Was that the one where the scrum kind of had its issues? Was that?
No, I think it could have been
a couple of years before that.
I think so.
Yeah. But Cipriani running the show then. Yeah.
And oh, yeah, he was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So it was, I think you have to admire, respect, and give England huge credit. I think, you know, I mean, we don't like to say it because we're Ireland, but like what England have done, imagine if we were in that situation. That is such consistent performing.
It is. Well, that's it. I mean,
these players have forgotten how to lose. They've forgotten the World Cup 2015.
Yeah. And that's when this run started. Like, it started when they beat Uruguay in that last game, which didn't mean anything, but they haven't lost since then. But your point about home and away is interesting, because we did see England rattled for a long time against Wales. And, like, Dunica, is that something that Ireland can take heart from? That a team that comes out to really upset England can actually make hay for at least a while, because it took a brilliant piece of finishing at the end of that game for England to beat Wales.
Yeah, but Scotland came out with the same mentality. You know, it's really hard to judge. I think Rog has given you unbelievable insight into the English psyche and what they actually think. And it's so true. I see it from being over there. They've grown a foot in confidence. And when they have their chest out, I'll be honest, lads, they're unbearable. Call it arrogance, call it what you want, but just people, you know, that you meet. We had a sponsors lunch on Tuesday, and just English supporters that follow their team now have totally swung the other way, that they're an incredible team again. And I think that's something that Rog was saying about Twicken, and when they feel like that, they actually think they're unbeatable. And I've said it before, that's what Eddie Jones has created. I know from chatting to Ben Teo, and I've said it to you before, he walked into that room after the World Cup and he said, we're going to become the greatest team in the world. And guys were laughing nearly at him, you know, behind his back. But he has set the vision, he has set the standards, and now they're reaching for them. And I think they're really dangerous when they're like that. Like Rog, I honestly, Rog, just from chatting to Benny this week, they're coming with that 2003 mentality of it's unfinished business, they need to get this result. And I know we want to stop them, but as Roland was saying, just the psyche of actually doing something historical, the mental edge, I worry that their drive to achieve this goal that they've set out from so long can be greater than ours to stop them. And you know, it's amazing when you chat about it. I read something about Arsene Wenger saying all players are fit now. The margin of error is no longer in fitness and speed and conditioning. It's in the mental game. And it's funny. I think it's I think rugby is getting to that stage as well, where all international teams are fit and ready to go. And I think, you know, it's who's able to kind of mentally get their team ready. And to be fair to him, he's done an incredible job in that, Eddie Jones. I think the way we'll beat them, for me, is I think we need to be better on scoreboard pressure. And I'd be interested in Rog's take on it. I think there's sometimes we have booted the ball to the corner where we should be knocking over points. You know, when you don't score from things like that, it's a massive momentum swing. You heard Joe Schmidt in his interview as well. I'd love us to go 3-6-9 and then to maybe try to play a bit more. I think we're trying to win the game too early in it, but I'd be interested in Rog's take on it.
Yeah, I think I agree most definitely. The interesting thing that you say, because you're over there and you cannot beat that, and that's, you're on the ground, so you have the feel for it. I think knowing the characters in the Irish dressing room, it'll be a sad day if England out-desire us in the Aviva. I could not accept or believe that for 1 minute when I look at fellas like, you know what I mean, Best, Donegal Ryan, Sean O'Brien. I think Sean O'Brien is a gem. I think this is what he stands for, this game at the weekend. I think he'll...
What, 'tis my field kind of thing?
Yeah, he has serious... he has great values, that guy, I think.
Do you need that in a team? Like, you know, something core yeah, that everyone clings to.
Of course you do, but it can't be two or three. You need that, you know what I mean, minimum six or seven. And I think that's lucky. I can only speak from my experiences when I was on teams with Dunica. We had that in abundance because, you know what I mean, how many times does a fella like Dennis Leamy get a mention nowadays? But, like, Dennis Leamy was a monster.
Mm.
Yeah.
And Dennis might speak once every 3 months, but what he spoke would last for 3 months, if you understand me.
Yeah.
And that's really important, that I mean, communication, sometimes people forget about the listening aspect.
Mm.
So Dennis absorbed, drove, and then analysed everyone, assessed everyone, and kind of just gave his opinion. And everyone was like, oh my God, speak more often, this guy is brilliant.
And
you have to have that in the Irish team, current team, because I know a few of them because I play with them. But I think, you know what I mean, that comes naturally to Peter O'Mahony, it comes naturally to Donegal Ryan, it comes naturally to Keith Earls. You know what I mean, people probably think Keith Earls is a winger and he's out there and he's looking to score a try, but like, this guy is so driven.
Mm. What about some of the non-Munster?
But the fellas, I know Rob Kearney, for example, is a great professional. And I think there's a reason. I think Rob made his debut in, 2005 and is playing in 2017. But people are happy to knock him and say there's someone else's time. It's not anyone else's time. You're going to have to rob the jersey off him, rip it off him. He's not going to give that up.
Hmm.
Every chance he's getting, like, there's no one highlighting the fact that he won, you know what I mean, 4 50-50 balls the last day in Cardiff in the air. He's doing the best he can. Obviously, he's a bit limited, I think, because his back is playing up on him a bit. But I think, I just think this is the weekend where, as a sportsman, you get measured. And I don't think Irish players have been found wanting. I could not stress enough to you how important this game is for rugby players, because, as we spoke about, I think they're very approachable. They're very much in the public eye. There's a massive attachment factor to the public. But, like, the players realise that they're responsible for the mood of a nation for a whole weekend and Monday morning because it's England. It's no other game that get the juices flowing like this weekend. This is game time.
Yeah. There's an interesting point there, because you said, well, what happens? You'd be very disappointed if an English team came over and kind of out-desired Ireland. You've got a couple of characters in that team, you know, an Owen Farrell and Dylan Hartley, who have been shown to be a little bit combustible in the past. Do you think that we've gone past the days where you might send out, let's say, one of the back rows to niggle them just to see what would happen?
What Rod said, that's in, you know, like, I totally agree. I think this weekend is a character test. It's what you're made up of. But like Scotland, I think there's learning from the Scottish game. Scotland went out way too emotional. They hated England. They went out and tried to knock six lumps out of them. That's not going to do it. I think there's massive onuses on the coach this weekend, on Joe and Simon and Greg Feek and Andy Farrell, to have game plan and the lads on note, because the emotional drive will come there. Rog went through the characters. You know what they're made up of. You know what it means to guys like Shawnee and Dunica to go out and represent Ireland versus England. So that's not in question. But if that tips over the edge and we play emotionally, it won't get the job done. They're a quality team. The saving grace for me is I think we're better players. I think, you look at Dunbar and Jones in the centre there for some of the English scores. Our centres would be absolutely ashamed if they defended like that for some of their strike plays. But I think there's a massive onus on the coaches to have the game plan on tact and ready for this weekend. This is the one where you would have seen how you have, you've 4 games before it, or 5 games, whatever it is, to see how well they're preparing coming into it. You know all their plays. You might be able to hear a certain amount of line-out calls, stuff like that. So I think there's a big onus on the coaches. As for guys like Farrell and Hartley, they love big occasions. Like, look at the Toji last week. He was laughing at some of the Scottish guys. So I think we have to beat them for being better players. I think that's when you rub guys' noses in it, when you don't even give Hartley or Farrell the time of day, when you're too busy on your job that you can't even include them in the game, you know? Then when you're running past them for scores and you're so driven to get another one. So, there was days where, like, I played with Johnny O'Connor, and I remember there was a call for Mad Dog. Rod, you'll remember, where he just took flyers at guys, and for certain players it's a good tactic. But I think the balance of our back row would be a waste, and how our team has progressed, it would be a waste to worry about anyone else but ourselves.
Yeah, I think, just to go back on we're talking about how you would beat them and stuff, like, I think Dunica's got it right there. I think the scoreboard pressure is a thing that Ireland really haven't done too great in this championship, maybe bar the France game. Just take the penalties, and I'd actually be amazed, even though the crowd might be backing them when they get a penalty to go for the corners, I'd be amazed if they do take those attacking lineouts, even though the temptation might be there. like, because, you know, the line out is something that's, even though it's been a great strength of ours, it's been targeted as a weakness as well. So I would just hope that if we get these penalties, we just kind of build up the pressure that way. And then another thing is, I suppose it's like, it's about this back row, and this back row that's been kind of vaunted as kind of world class as well, but yet again Wales kind of showed them up again and outscrapped them. So I kind of think maybe this might be a game where Heaslip just dives back into the trenches and you don't see much of him carrying, and you just see O'Brien just let off the leash a little bit more. And if that happens, I think we have a great chance. And then it's again with kind of Schmidt and Dunica talked about it there in the last podcast of backing these guys, and just how much that will kind of mean to these guys, that pretty much send out the same set of troops again to kind of, you know, play this game against the English.
In terms of the tactical side of that, then, it might be silly to ask a kicker, would you prefer to take the points or go to the corner? But we have seen a change. Leinster do it more, Ireland do it more, and go in early to the corner to try and build that pressure. Is that something that they need to rethink now?
It's an interesting question, and I think the only answer I can give you, I think every situation is different, because I think there's definitely a feel aspect to that. Mm. There was teams, and this is going back a long time, but that tactic has always been there, Andy. I think you've got to have a feel for it. There's a certain time that you kind of just have to trust your instinct about going to the corner. If you have any hesitation in going, you shouldn't go to the corner. You'll get, I think, the people to make that call are probably, you know what I mean, the props and second row, because I think they are the only four people that are really, you should respect their opinion in terms of, have they the capacity to drive them over?
Yeah.
Because
you're telling porkies now. Hold on a second. This is complete. I'm caught. Because I've played we've played since 1819, and what I used to love is that when you used to come up, Raj, take the ball and say, I'm knocking it over the bar. You wouldn't even ask Dricko, Paulie, Rory, whoever.
Did Raj ever ask a prop, could he take that kick?
I didn't maybe express that very well. I'm saying that from my point of view as a kicker, no problem, but yeah, there are times where 7 is better than 3, but I'd say the ratio would be 10%.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, because it depends where that kick is, because, you know, I've looked at this before. There was data came out of New Zealand looking at test rugby over 10 years or whatever, and when you actually put all those thousands of kicks together, you can see the green line around, and it's about between 35 and 40 metres, and outside that, as in crow flies to the posts, outside that your success rate plummets, unless you're a freak like Frans Steen. It plummets. So outside that, your equation changes, and that's where you're going for. Is it 10% or is it 20% or is it 50%? You know.
Yeah, well, I suppose if the kick is around the 22, then you should be kicking the ball.
Yeah.
Over the bar.
Yeah. Every time.
I don't think you can say it every time, because what moment of the game it is, how tired are the opposition? If it's at the start of the game, I don't think the opposition
Is there a bit of the captain looking at the opposing captain's eyes and sort of saying?
No, I wouldn't think so. I would say it's. I think there's two people that matter: the captain and the kicker. And in most situations, you need the kicker to be dominant.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the point I'm trying to make. Sometimes, there, Rog, I remember we were blowing at times. Forwards were really tired. I remember it's so many games where you wouldn't even give us a look. You'd rifle it into the corner, and I'll never forget, just get at it, you know? And I, as a forward, took massive confidence that you knew we were just about to break them. So, I was there, he's our eyes, he's our playmaker, he sees that we have him on the rack here, that's why he's put it in the corner. Whereas other times, there's times as a forward I would have felt, right, let's have a go, and I'd see you pointing at the post. So I think, you know, we saw with Alan Wynne Jones and Lee Halfpenny, it's an awful position to put a captain in, to ask, you know, his goal kickers. I think not only does a Ken got a fancy, or your goal kicker got a fancy his chances at knocking over the kick, but he has to have a feel for the game as well of, you know, when he should do it. And I think maybe that is a combination between that leadership group that could be a little bit stronger for me. I think I loved it the way it was when you used to boss it, and I question, is that there at the moment?
So there's one little extra wrinkle now for this weekend. So yes, you know, Ireland cannot win the Six Nations. England are going for the Grand Slam. They are going for the world record number of wins by a tier one nation. But if Wales win on Saturday afternoon and Ireland lose, that puts Wales into the top four seeds for the World Cup draw, which happens in May. There are no more tests between now and then, and Ireland would drop out. How big of an impact would that be if you were an Irish player looking ahead 2 years?
Yeah, it's massive consequences, and I wonder, is that information out there? Is it information that the boys in Carton House need to know?
That was my follow-up question. Is that sort of thing that you need to keep away from the players? Say, look, that'll look after itself. You go out and win.
Yeah, most definitely, but there's no harm in knowing the consequences either. I know that may rattle a few people, but when it's put to you like that, it kind of, even hearing it now, sends a kind of a shudder down your spine. You're like, because it's not too big an ask in terms of if England keep their momentum.
Yeah.
Wales, with their confidence back, could easily beat France.
Yeah.
So you're not, it's not two improbables.
No.
So
how did we get here question, you know?
I actually did mention that to Dunica Ryan at the end of the Wales game, and it did seem like it was an actual surprise to him that the rankings were for grabs. And I suppose maybe you guys might know more as players that it is week to week. Like, he was kind of saying that, okay, that might be something the coaches might tell us in the lead up to the game, but it is week to week focus sometimes, is it?
Completely. And if you were a player, I don't think you'd be aware of that, because your mindset is very different. Now, on the outside, these are all the things that we calculate, because unfortunately, we don't have any match to play. So this is what we get our buzz out of, working on permutations.
This is McGeady gets his notepad out. Yeah.
I think, but it has big consequences. But I think this weekend is an opportunity for Ireland. It's not to stop England, it's about Ireland.
Yeah.
And I think that will be really important. I think that's it's a very different mindset and message among the players. I think it's an opportunity for Ireland to show, this is what we represent, this is what we do well.
Quick prediction.
No, I'm sticking what I said at the outset. I think Ireland at home win.
Dunica?
Yeah, I'm a Raj. I can never go against my heart on calls like this. I actually think it's going to be tough. I like I said to you, I think it's 2003. They're coming over to make history, but I think Raj nailed it there. If we go out and worry about ourselves only, if we don't get tied up in this emotional rubbish that won't get us anything out of it, and we go out and perform, we'll win.
Right, quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the situation at Racing and Stade in Paris.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
We're back, and there is an interesting situation going on this week in French rugby, where it was announced that the two famous old French clubs, Stade Français and Racing 92, are to merge from next season. Raj, it must be an interesting situation at a human level to be involved with.
Yeah, it was. Monday was broken in a meeting for all the Racing players, staff and administration staff, and Jackie Lorenzetti's business staff. So it was up on a PowerPoint, and the presentation was unveiled in front of our eyes, and there was, I think, different reactions, because you have people from all over the world forming to create a club, and these are the present representatives of the club, trying to do our best. So it was greeted with, I suppose, mixed reaction, because you have some fellas like Henri Chavancy, who's played at Racing since he's been 6 years of age. It's his club, he was formed there, it means everything. He was with the French camp, so he wasn't there for the presentation. I don't know what his reaction would be. I presume it would be a negative reaction, because it's his club. He doesn't want anything happening to his club. And that news, it was a surreal Monday, I suppose, from the time anything you would have thought about going into work that day was obviously disappointing after the Grenoble match. But to go in and find out this is happening was just, I suppose, another strange day in a very strange season.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be very little that's certain right now. You've got the two Laurents seem to be done and dusted as the coaching ticket for next season.
There's a Stade France, Pierre Arnold is the manager, and they have that seems to be the shell. And where everyone else is, no one knows.
Yeah, it's building up to be a bit of a Hunger Games, you know.
Yeah, there has been, I suppose, a lot of outcry over the, I suppose, the whatever, the disappearance of Stade Francais. People are the players from Stade Francais are due to go on strike, I believe.
At the time of recording, they are still striking. The union is involved. The players' union has said, according to the French media, that there is no acceptable alternative than for the merger to not happen. So we've seen there are battle lines being drawn in France, which is a delicate situation when people are looking forward to where their income might be coming from next year.
Yeah, well, I think that's obviously it's a very sensitive subject in terms of the people involved. But also it's the timing couldn't be worse than the fact, from our own point of view, we're seventh in the table. You have to get into the top six. We have a crucial game against Montpellier, and the Montpellier match hasn't been mentioned.
Yeah.
Coupled with the fact that I suppose one week in every month I go to Marcosi, which is the French Federation Centre for the first team to do coaching badges. I've been there this week, so I've been out of the loop. So it's basically, it's kind of business as usual, yet it's not business as usual, if you can understand me. No one really knows what's happening.
Yeah, concentrate on what's ahead of you, but you don't know what's around the next corner.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Donegal, from your perspective, how does it seem to you from the outside looking in?
Well, it was crazy. It's mad how something like that affects the whole market. So, it's a crazy thing to say, but I knew after we finished training, we were doing conditioning games, and you came into our facility, you could see Jan, our recruitment guy, going ballistic. He was running around the place like his hair was on fire, to quote Eddie O'Sullivan, but just the market now has been thrown open. If there was 45 players to come back and of top quality, as there is with these teams, into the market at this stage, you see how it affects other guys in the dressing room. So some of my teammates are looking for clubs. They've had French options. Roger, tell you more now that there is greater incentive for French clubs to keep French players. So obviously they would be top of the pecking order and would kazump any player that's looking at, you know, that maybe might have the start of heads of agreement done with certain clubs. So it, not only does it affect the two teams involved, but it has really kind of set a big shake around the whole rugby recruitment market as well, because if there was 45 top quality players to come available from this situation, it really does affect an awful lot of guys.
That's an interesting point. So Gavin Mortimer wrote an interesting piece on the situation for Rugby World, and he mentioned this point, and he was saying that you can have no more than 16 players ineligible for France in the squad. So obviously you've got, I think, 24 or 25 of those when you combine the two squads right now. So that's a whole lot of agents' calls right there.
Yeah, Dunnock is right.
I'll give you a perfect example. We four guys lined up with French clubs and they were all put on ice this week, you know, since Monday, so...
Yeah, that's not good.
Well, it's not good for them. They've dependents and family, so, you know, like, they might come get across the line, but right now, you know, in a funny year, like, Rod, you might have seen it better, you see the recruitment side better than me, but it's been an odd year recruitment-wise. But it's...
What do you mean by an odd year? Do you mean, like, apart from this situation, it's just felt odd?
Yeah, well, you look at the amount of top-end players that aren't fully signed up for next year. It's you chat to any of the agents, it's an odd year. I don't know, Roger, you might have some insight on it, but it doesn't feel like players are being signed up as quickly as possible. Maybe countries are looking, like France, to improve their league by having more French players in it. I know the English market has been slow. I think, you know, maybe it's to leave the market, get to a point where you have players so desperate they'll nearly sign for anything. So just from knowing and chatting to guys that are out of contract at the moment, they're finding it difficult. Now, I know I'm in a unique situation where our guys probably haven't got the aces up their sleeves with performance that they would have liked, but I know from chatting to a few agents that that's the case across the whole market.
Well, one player at the moment who has secured his move is Ian Madigan. So out half, leaving the French top 14 to go and join Bristol, who right now look as if they're going down. What do you think of that move for Madigan?
It's an interesting move, I think. For me, I think it has similarities with Pat Lam in terms of why Pat Lam moved. I think Madigan is going to be one of the best paid players in the world, which
it's a short career.
Completely. I think the big news for me was Ian Madigan moving to Bordeaux. Once he had made that decision, you're dealing with a different set of circumstances, because he has become a professional rugby player. I think when you leave the Irish model, especially in his situation, you understand the consequences. So what is Ian Madigan doing? Ian Madigan is looking after himself. He needs to do that. He has been offered an incredible deal to go to Bristol as the playmaker to ensure Bristol get to where they want to get. With that, he's been financially rewarded really well. And when Ian Madigan is 33 years of age, no one will care about Ian Madigan. It's the same that happens to everyone, but I think he's smart enough to realise that he's played for Ireland. He's had a great career as an impact sub for Ireland. Johnny was in his way in Leinster. He's not going to take his place. He's made the decision to look after Ian Madigan, and I can completely understand that because I'm over there. What you need to be careful about is that, not careful about, but I think there's nothing better than playing for your home province or Ireland. But unfortunately, you can have probably about 20 in each province doing that. And it's such a massive passion, and it should never be underestimated. I think your reputation, when you succeed at that, I think you get a different respect from people. But Ian Madigan has decided to do this, and I can completely understand what he's doing. I think when you hear what Pat Lam is doing, you kind of say it to him, fair play. Mm. You know, because you saw...
He's done it once at Connacht. Can he do it again?
No, sorry. I'm talking about his honesty and how in the message he delivered to people what happened with poor old Axel. Mm. And Pat Lam has said that he's been fired. He's had not a tough existence, but financially, I'd say, not the best paid jobs. And now, because of his perseverance, because of his commitment, because of his vision, he's been more rewarded with a great job, which will secure his financial security for him and his family. He said that, and I admire that.
Lam spoke extremely emotionally. I remember the interview you were talking about, yeah, just saying, look, I have this chance now to set everything up. So if I pass tomorrow,
exactly,
everything's okay.
And that's beautiful, I think, because anyone that, me and Donica, and I think we see things differently now after what happened to Axel. I think it is very different. And I think Pat Lam is too, because he's in Connacht and the so-called big brother is in Munster as a coach. And that's not being disrespectful to Connacht, but I think that's Munster is a bigger province in the fact of what it's achieved. He's seen what has happened there. It might be completely unrelated to sport, but it was an example for him to go, my family is very important to me. I need to do what's best for my family. He has done wonders with Connacht, and I think he deserved everything he got in terms of the deal Bristol proposed him, and you couldn't but just tip your hat to him.
Donica, have things changed for you since Axel passed?
Yeah, of course, like all of us.
In terms of the way you might approach this side of life?
Yeah, you definitely see that. I'll be honest, it held that group to a higher level than I'd ever thought before. I think you're lucky to play with players and you call them your teammates. That group were, it's mad and it's a cringy thing to say, but a band of brothers. Like, it just being around each other at that time, just as Rod spoke, guys like Leans that, you know, and I'm bad with it, keeping a contact with guys, but as soon as you meet, there's that special bond, and he was the leader of that. Like, I said it before about Axel, he left us, he motivated us, to, and myself in particular, to play beyond myself. He just saw something, or he could strike a chord in a speech or a chat before a match, or the levels that he expected from you to play better than you, for me anyway, to play better than I actually am. And I'm massively thankful for him that. But there's a group of us like that see it. And, you know, I've heard Rod say it before, and, you know, we lost a teammate, a friend, a brother, but there was, you know, there's, you know, two little boys that lost their dad, and that as a father, that kicks in more so than anything. You look at, you know, Tony and Danny there, they've lost their dad. You look at his whole family, they've lost their son, their husband. That's the bit that matters. And, you know, for me, and I know Raj would agree, those boys need to know that their dad was Superman. He led by example. His character, his values were through the roof, and he brought guys with him, and he's a special, special man.
Okay. On that note, we will come back with a look ahead to a happier time, a festival of rugby in Dublin for Patrick's Day weekend.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
Okay, so if you are in Dublin over Patrick's Day weekend, there is a lot of rugby on. Let's go through the schedule. There's 6 p.m. in the RDS. There's the Ireland Legends and the England Legends. There's 6 p.m. in Donnybrook. The Ireland Under-20s play England Under-20s. At 8 p.m. in Donnybrook, Ireland Women's team play the England Women. Both teams going for the Grand Slam. That's a better situation than the men's team find themselves in. So if you can get a ticket, be at the Aviva Stadium on 5 p.m. on Saturday. The Ireland Legends and England Legends could be a bit of crack, lads.
Yeah, there was. I think Shane Byrne was saying there that England have kind of had Ireland's number in recent competitions. So, there is that kind of emotional element there to it today. And there's a lot of lads who've actually recently retired. Like Roger's even saying there, he doesn't think they'll be able to hold Stephen Ferris back. And you have lads like Darcy as well, who's looking to feature as well. So hopefully maybe this new influx of blood makes a bit of a difference.
Well, as I say, if you can make to 6 p.m. to the RDS, then 8 p.m. to Donnybrook, and then find out where the Legends are going afterwards, that might be a good Paddy's Day night in Dublin. I think we will wrap it there. Thank you very much to Pat McCarry.
Cheers.
Thanks to Donica for dialing in. Thank you, Ron O'Gara.
Thank you, Andy.
Joe Harrington is our producer. Shane Dempsey is on sound. Get in touch by tweeting any of us or at sportsjoe.ie, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or through your favourite podcasting app. This has been The Hard Yards. I am Andy McGeady. We will talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.